Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, you ever wonder what Phil and I wear while we podcast? You can find out if you join our Patreon. We'll also be talking about the films of 1989, but that's definitely less important than seeing our Zoom backgrounds, our headphone choices, and our sweatshirts.
It's true. It's true. You'll get to see all the various pieces of artwork that I have framed on my office wall, and you can see Kenny's garden, sort of. So that's something. That's exciting.
It's a hanging garden.
It's a hanging garden. But perhaps more important than anything, we are doing this Patreon to cover the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, with amazing guests like Tom Meissen, Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Brian Cogman, Chuck Hayward. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. And for $5, you'll get access to all the audio of these fantastic episodes. For a few bucks more, you'll get video as well of our 99 and 89 episodes. And perhaps, most importantly, you'll be supporting us so we can just keep making podcast content for you guys. Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I'm your host, Phil Iskov, and with me back to talk about Sex and the City again is Emmy Potter and Carrie Corrigan. We're doing a bonus episode this week on everyone's favorite mini-series extension of, I don't know, whatever the fuck this thing is called. And just like that, so I want to kind of ask you guys, because you were both on independently for Sex and the City. obviously, you guys loved the show. But the show went through sort of, I almost feel like each season is its own thing in a weird way. And then you have the movies, and now we have this, they say it's limited, but I think we all know we're getting another season of this thing at some point, I imagine. If for no other reason than because this all felt like a weird preamble to a better television show. But I do feel like, you know, your first two seasons of that show, Michael Patrick King was involved in the show from season two onward, but was really kind of handed the reins of the show in season three. So your first two seasons are kind of this Darren Star, Michael Patrick King, two-headed monster thing. And then the show becomes a lot more, I would say, substantive, or at least sort of really finds itself. Season three, four, Sarah Jessica Parker gets pregnant season five, which is sort of this weird, like, short season where they're just trying to hide her pregnancy the whole time. And then season six is, you know, the end of the show, which is sort of split into two parts. The second part feeling like a movie. I would say that part two of the last season feels a little bit like this season, where, like, there's sort of grander notions that he's sort of toying with kind of. And then the movies are abominations, in my opinion. Although some people really like the first movie. And then we have this. What are your, I guess my question to you is, do you have favorite seasons? Do you like the movies? Where do you guys land on sort of Sex and the City from 30,000 feet before we dive into this thing? Uh-oh. Emmy's face just like...
let's see. I mean, anything from season three on is enjoyable. I would say that like...
Enjoyable.
No. I mean, it's like fun. It's fun to watch. It's. Yeah. I think like I like... I get confused as to what happens, what season, because it all like starts blending together at a certain point. But like, I like a lot of the
when Miranda gets pregnant.
Okay, so I like a lot of like the Aiden stuff. I like some of the Miranda being pregnant stuff in season four. Season five is just like whatever, and then season six, the back half of that, like the final half, is like is really good because it's like you kind of don't know. What she's going to do. Is she going to go to Paris? Is she going to, you know, stay in New York? So that's good. I did enjoy the first movie and I do wind up watching it a lot when it's on E every weekend. it's on E like every weekend. It's either Sweet Home Alabama or Sex and the City one and two. I refuse to see the second movie, although I have
I've seen
the first hour. Well, I've seen like the first hour. I've seen the Liza Minnelli wedding, which is all I care about. And I've seen when
wedding ever.
Yeah, I've seen when they get to Saudi Arabia, which, in my opinion, when Roni, which is Real Housewives of New York, goes to the Middle East, they go to Morocco, and that's more fun than Sex and the City too. There's a lot of stuff on camels and that as well. My boyfriend, on the other hand, had only seen. The movies he had seen one and two, and I was like, "That is deranged. No one should have only seen the movies." And then he quote like, and then of course I know the Lawrence of my labia joke because you know,
and that they all wear burkas. At one
they point. All wear burkas, and it's really offensive. And I pretend that movie did not happen, and instead we'll just watch the season of Real Housewives of New York where they go to Morocco instead. So. You know, like I love the show,
but like less
just as offensive, but less
offensive.
Yeah,
but less like sitcom, cartoonish.
Yeah,
right.
So it's like
right.
I love the original series. I want like it's something I can throw on and like even though
very
I've seen it, it's like even though I've seen it a million times, like it's still really entertaining. And the chemistry between those the four leads is just like it's great. It's beautiful. In each character really feels distinct. And then I have thoughts on that when we get
to Angels. So Carrie, what, do you have favorite stuff, seasons, what have you from the original series and thoughts on the movies and all that?
Oh, season four is my favorite. Like, right. I have that like answer. I'm like ready to go. Season four, the season four finale, favorite episode. It's so good. A good like love letter to I love a love letter to New York. What can I say?
Sure. You didn't think that in just like that was a good love letter to New York?
It had its moments.
Okay, all right.
It had its moments.
So first do you like the movie, the first movie?
I like the first movie.
Okay.
Definitely that ugly it's overall bag.
Long, but
yeah.
Minus the ugly bag, it could have like 30. It could have 30 minutes shaved off of it easily. Second movie, I had not seen since I saw it in theaters, and I remember seeing it in theaters. I must have been like 22 or 23 or something. Like when I don't know when it came out, but
2008, I believe. 2008.
The first movie did.
Yeah,
I remember I was a senior in high school and I saw the first movie.
Okay.
Then maybe it was 2010. Like 21 it was like, or 22.
I think it was 2010. Yeah.
So something like that.
I feel like it was one of the big sort of hits against it was right in the middle of like the financial crisis. And everyone was just like, what the fuck are we doing? Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So I hadn't seen it since then. I remember even at that age coming out of the theater, like, what the fuck was that? Like, what the fuck did I just, I cannot believe it. I need to have, I need to rewatch the entire series as a palate cleanser, but it was on E or something not long ago, like a month or two ago.
No, it's right literally before. On E, like every other weekend.
Well, the first one is more than the second one, but yeah. The second one was on like right before And Just Like That started, and there was nothing else on TV one night. And I put it on thinking, I'm just going to have this in the background while I like mindlessly scroll. And I ended up watching it. And I like, it was like a train wreck.
Yeah. No, it's, I really it's a
was like, this is so bad. And I cannot, I'm not enjoying this at all. It's not even like a gleeful delight in how campy and bad it is. It's not even bad in a good way. I was just like, I can't stop watching this because I'm horrified. And I can't pull away.
So I watched it again around the time that I was doing the podcast because I wanted to sort of watch the entire series. I had seen the second movie, not in theaters. I watched it when it was out on video or something like that at some point. So, and my roommate, who's also a very big Sex and the City fan, loves the first movie, had never seen the second one. And I was like, you're going to watch this with me. You need to see it. And I swear to you, like, half hour from the end, she was fully prone on the couch with a pillow over her head saying, please make it stop. I can't do this. Like, it was physically hurting her. Like, it really is just a fucking brutal, brutal thing.
Just that the being cringe said, level through the roof. Yeah.
What's interesting about, there's lots of things, and we'll talk about them, about this And Just Like That, this miniseries, this limited, whatever, is that it's clearly a reaction to the second film to some degree or another, right? Which is that they're just like, they saw the way everyone hated this movie. They saw the reaction to it. And the impression I got was that there was a third movie kind of locked and loaded to some degree that Michael Patrick King wanted to do, which from rumors, conjecture, what have you, was going to revolve around Big's death. And I do think that a lot of the notions in this miniseries is sort of a distillation of some of that, of like wanting to do what is life like if the love of your life dies. I think.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And like exploring what it's like to, I mean, what is Sex in the City if they're all settled down? I mean, minus Samantha, but like, you know, what is it then?
There's no conflict. There's nothing. Yeah, no, 100%. So I think that that idea is interesting to me. When this was announced, the idea of like a show that was going to explore being 55 plus and either potentially single or dealing with grief or just being a woman at that age, that sounded relatively interesting to me. And I do think that that is at the forefront of this show, but I'm not entirely convinced they know what they want to say about those things.
Well, I feel like there's more sex on the Golden Girls than there was on this show. Like those women are all like there. So there was all this chatter around And Just Like That there. And there were like memes being like, this is, you know, these were the ages of like Dorothy and Sophia and Rose and Blanche. And like, they were all, minus Sophia, they were all supposed to be like probably like 55 plus, right? And the way that we viewed, you know, society viewed older women when the Golden Girls first started airing versus the way we view women in their 50s and older now has like really shifted. And, you know, and people just like look younger now. And granted, they have like the access to the best skincare in the world, but like, it's just like when you watch Golden Girls, it's like filthy. Like these women are like, they're like just like fucking all over the place. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it was network television, you have to like keep those, you know, keep things a little more reined in. But like, you know, I think that there was like a way to do it. And if the Golden Girls could do it, it's like, yeah, the show is just missing that.
It first of all, it is a surprisingly sexless show until it's not with Che. Because Che Che really, I mean, like, we could do 4 hours on Che, I feel
just
like.
On Che.
Just on yeah. Che alone.
The Che Diaz of it all.
Oh my God. I mean, okay. So I think that Che is a perfect distillation of the best of intentions. The road to hell is paved with the best of intentions. I do think that they went out of their way to try to create this character that could, you know, birth a different side of Miranda, that could show sort of an edginess, that could kind of be, but I almost think that Che was too much of a, like, Swiss Army knife. Like, they just wanted her to be too many things, and ultimately she just ended up being kind of none of them. But Carrie, what are your thoughts on Che?
I mean, I think first of all, though, like, yeah, I do wish that the show dealt with sexuality in, like, sure, older women better than being like, mm-hmm, they're all in sexless marriages now. Like, sure, the sex goes out of marriage. And
Carrie
I
still blows,
wish,
still blows Harry, though, just FYI. Yeah.
Charlotte. Yeah. Still blows Harry.
Sorry,
yeah.
Yes, sorry, my apologies.
Oh God.
Yeah.
The can of worms that would open up.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting in that, like, Che was never supposed to be that big of a role. Like, Che, oh, really? Was never supposed to be the thing for Miranda. Like, it was, and it makes, I think the problem is the first two, maybe even three episodes, mm-hmm, are good.
Sure.
Good-ish.
Sure. Yeah.
They show,
yeah,
promise.
Yeah, yeah.
First two especially show promise. And I think those, in those two episodes, you see, like, the kind of hints that she's going to end up with. Like, she has a lot in common and a lot of chemistry with Naya. And there was that interview where, with the writers, where they were like, yeah, we were actually going to pair them off. And then
that's interesting.
And then Cynthia Nixon was like, oh, I don't like the way this is, like, two older straight women fumbling around. Like, that's how they, like, how did they get there? It has to be some sort of, there needs to be someone who sort of, like, makes this, awakens this, like, discovery or something in Miranda. But something that was, like, it seems too cliche for two older straight women to be like, let's bone, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, the problem is that first and foremost, when you say that, it's like, it's much more organic, and you can see that the, yeah, that the seeds are being laid, mm-hmm, for that relationship to go there. And then Naya drops off a cliff. Ultimately, her character just kind of doesn't, as much as I really like the performance. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, I understand there is complexity to, you know, fertility and all the various things that she was dealing with. But ultimately, it sort of felt like in a different television show, this is happening. So there's that. There's also, you know, the Cynthia Nixon thing that you're referring to. Does there feels to me, and we've been texting throughout this entire series, the three of us, about sort of the various issues that we have and things we like and mostly don't like. But I do think that there's an overpowering sense that Cynthia Nixon came into this project with notions of what she wanted Miranda to go through. And that's all fine and good. And she is a producer on the show, so that comes into play. It just feels like the character kind of got wrangled away from the writers a little bit. And perhaps Cynthia Nixon kind of took a little bit of ownership of this new direction of Miranda's character. And listen, I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I feel as though the execution of these things felt a little bit muddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it has good intentions. It's just like, yeah, the execution is sloppy. It's, yeah, a sloppy narrative.
Yeah.
And it's sloppy character building, and it goes against, yep, the entire character Bible.
Well, it's, you know, you talked about the first couple episodes working. I put that in quotation marks because I do think that they work better than the majority of the middle episodes of this, mm-hmm, run. It really feels to me like a feature script was written. He had that to work from, he wanted the feature ultimately to be sort of the launching pad for the series. And it feels like it just diverges. Like at episode four or so, you're just sort of like, what is this show now? Miranda isn't dealing with alcoholism anymore. I mean, like, it's just dropped like a bad hat. You're just like, it's just everything just kind of just veers into a completely different direction. And I don't know if that's just a lack of grace. I've mentioned this on our thread, but like, I really wonder if this series was boarded. Like, were there any writers' boards in terms of 30,000 feet? Because it just feels like it just kind of lurches in all these different directions, that it doesn't feel like there's a much of a sort of flow or organic arc to anything that's going on.
Yeah, it really feels like the only character who has kind of more of a solid arc through the series is Carrie. Yeah. I think like that's the only one that seems to be anchored in a sense of, even though like, first of all, the sense of time in this show, it's like
bonkers.
Post-pandemic. It's like in a parallel universe. It's like post-pandemic New York, but it's like one episode, it's like a week later, but then all of a sudden it's like 6 months later. And then it's like, oh no, we're like by the end of this season or whatever we're doing, by the end of it, it's like, oh, well, now we're like a year later. But like, I think that Carrie's arc is the only one that seems to have any sort of like narrative consistency. And then I would put Charlotte's probably second, because so much yes. of hers is like dealing with her kids. And then yeah. Miranda's is like, it's like, it's like, hey, remember when Miranda was an alcoholic? Well, she's over that now. And now she's gone from one addiction to the new addiction, which is Che Diaz and her relationship with them. And like,
we all crave Che though. We all have a crave.
I have to say that this, you know,
who
this week,
that?
Yeah, this week on Thursday, I did wake up a little sad and I was like, I am craving me some Che Diaz memes, and there won't be any more because we won't have any new episodes for a while.
Until her pilot gets picked up.
I mean, Che is like an inspiration in that you can be like not that funny and do like no visible work, and all of a sudden you're moving to LA because you've got like a pilot that's like based on, I'm like the new Roseanne, and I like yeah. when she was funny, and I was like, what
is that?
Yeah, no nepotism or connections, like
none.
That's yeah. the even wilder part.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, Hollywood, aspirational.
That's Trey.
I think that, I mean, the Carrie thing, I think you're absolutely right that Carrie feels like they had an end point in mind, which is, I think they knew they wanted to end in Paris. I think they knew that, I mean, they shot something. We'll never see it because Chris Noth is obviously very much canceled, understandably so. But like the Paris thing felt like this is our end point for a character. I love that she's like, the fuck, I'm going with Charlotte. I'll go alone, which I think is crazy. which I think is great. So I do agree with you that like it felt like Carrie starts at one place, big dies. Carrie ends at one place, potentially open to the possibilities of being over this grief and moving on with her life and other men and other possibilities and what have you. The problem, as I said up top, is that I want to watch that show. I'm really not interested in what I watched for about 6 or 7 episodes of just sort of these weird kind of flailings of story and character and what have you. I would watch the show where Carrie is Fraser Crane. I'm fine with that. That's okay with me. I'll watch Carrie, you know, give me her VO again. Give me sort of some bearing walls of story and character that at least I felt like, you know, with those 22-minute episodes, the reason the original show is so bingeable, I think we all agree, is that each character has a defined storyline that has, you know, 8 minutes of screen time or so and wraps itself up in 3 or 4 beats, and it works. And this is just so, there's so much fat on this show. It's crazy. There's just stuff where you're just like, what are we even doing?
Yeah, well, I was like, wow, it's 40, each episode is like 40 minutes.
Fuck.
So long.
I'm trying to remember, like, aren't some of the writers on this show not TV writers? Like, aren't they media people? And like essayists? Yeah.
Well, I know that, like, Samantha Irby is an essayist, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Like, she has
a couple books. She has a couple books of,
I'm trying,
like,
to remember if essayists. She's written before.
I do want to hone in for a second on Tragically Hip, which is Samantha Irby's episode, which is the one where Carrie has hip surgery. She's not getting a replacement hip. They're just fixing her hip because she has some sort of a genetic side, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They just make it very clear that she's not getting a new hip. I want to bring up this episode because I feel as though there's a portion of this episode that to me exemplifies what I think this show wants to do and why it's pretty much incapable of doing it. So you have a scene where Carrie, post-surgery, Miranda's taking care of her. She falls asleep. Che comes over and they proceed to hook up in the kitchen. And Miranda has the first orgasm she's had in her life, it seems. I don't know. Che takes her to space and back. And while Carrie needs to go to the bathroom, she pees in a Gatorade bottle because she hears that Miranda is, you know, hooking up with Che, or sees it even. And then on the bed, Miranda and Che stop hooking up, and then Carrie and Miranda get in a whole argument. It's just like, what the fuck is this show? Like, it's just you genuinely, I'm like, is this supposed to be funny? Is this supposed to be emotionally resonant? Is this supposed to be sexy? Like, I genuinely had no idea. But I was like watching it, like it's like a car crash in slow motion that you're just like, I can't turn away from this, but I genuinely don't know what the fuck we're doing. Did you guys find the scene? Was any of this effective for you?
I mean, I thought that was one of the better of the middle episodes, actually, because I just thought the whole stacking of the house of cards, like,
yes,
the house of cards,
sure,
the like antics of peeing in the Gatorade bottle, like that, some of the like comedy in that, mm-hmm, reminded me of the old,
sure,
classic, oh geez, this show, oh geez, like Miranda, sure, slipping and falling and hurting her neck or whatever, but mm-hmm, like,
I just to be clear, I'm not
the
saying
aftermath that of it.
I didn't say that it wasn't working. I just found myself deeply discombobulated as to intent.
Right. Because the thing is, like, it worked to a point, mm-hmm, and then it's like what you said, where it's like, well, wait a second. How did we just go from something that is like slapstick to they're talking about Miranda's drinking problem? It like just wild tonal shifts that I think the original show is capable of having moments of drama and moments of comedy in the same episode, just like life. This, yep, is so, like, it just took such wild swings from one to the other that it was, mm-hmm, kind of like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, it
how
doesn't,
many people are chiming in on this in the writer's room or something? Like,
right. Yeah, it doesn't really feel like it feels like all of them are very confused. Like all the writers and Michael Patrick King are very confused as to what they ultimately wanted their tone to be. And I would wager that SJP also had a voice in shaping some of this as well. Oh, yeah. And it just seems that confusion is then, of course, anything that you're not clear on is going to come out in your scripts. And I think, yeah, when you look at the line of the season, it is just like the tone is like all over the place. And I think I said this in our group chats. I feel like some of the swings to me come out of like Sarah Jessica Parker having worked with like Sharon Horgan on Divorce, and some of these like big dramatic shifts, like, like, I fell off of watching Divorce, even though, like, I'm a big fan of Sharon Horgan. And I love Catastrophe. And I think Catastrophe does this so well, where you have these, like, really, like, funny, nasty things happen. And then, like, the next second, you're, like, ready to weep. And it seems like that's kind of what they were trying to go for. But it's also, like, Catastrophe again did that in like 25 minutes. And I think like these episodes are so long and the tone is so all over the place, and adding more time just makes that more apparent. Like, we're not sure what we really want to do with these people and what we really want to say. And so, yeah, I did find it like, that episode I did find wild, because it was like, oh my God. So Miranda's getting finger blasted in the kitchen. And then we have like, Carrie's like trying to pee in the bed. And she's like, pee the bed, which is like cringe, 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 which is like how I felt for most of the series, like cringe, cringe. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden, we're having this discussion about like, I think Miranda's an alcoholic. And then that gets dropped like two episodes later. So it's just... all these inconsistencies add up to like, the little ones are adding up to just like wild, big inconsistencies that
I think whiplash. The divorce connection, I think, is a valid one. Like, I think that it's, I mean, I also fell off of Divorce. I just found it hard to watch. It was just, it was just a very depressing show.
That's a bummer. It's a real bummer.
Super bummer of a show. And I was just like, I just don't want to get on this ride. But this show is just, the tone's all over the place. I also feel like, so each of our leads, which is, that's nice.
It's a nice person of color, a token a nice person of color.
Miranda gets two. But because of this infusion of characters into the show, I think that's also why the running time balloons, because they're just like, we have to give each of these supporting characters arcs as well. So it becomes a much larger ensemble, which is kind of not really this show's bag in its own way. So it just, and then on top of all of this, it should be said, you know, unfortunately, Willie Garson passes away during the production of the show. So, you know, Stanford's character just sort of obviously drops out. And Anthony gets kind of slotted into what feels like most of Stanford's storylines, or at least, so he's also getting real estate. There's just too many characters to service. And then on top of all of this, they're not even really the characters we've grown to love over the series either. Like, I'm a little bit like, I'm fine with you infusing a whole bunch of new characters into the show, I guess, but they have to feel of a piece. And I'm just not entirely convinced that, forgive me, what was, Lisa Todd Wexley, or LTW as they refer to her. I'm just not really sure what she brought to the show other than some insane outfits. The outfit she wears, it's crazy. Anyway, please.
She was the weakest of the additional characters. Like, I don't know if she had any sort of, I don't think they gave her any sort of like backstory or like storyline arc throughout the season, other than like, oh, her mother-in-law kind of doesn't like her and she threw a dinner party where Charlotte was her only white friend. Oh, haha, she's the black Charlotte. Like,
and then she has trouble like doing an auction at a fancy, you know, gala
kind of fight. I don't know.
Yeah, kind of fight, but it's a shame, because I think that actress, and her name is escaping me,
Nicole Parker.
Yeah, she's very charismatic. She's great to watch on screen.
She is. I think that Naya's storyline drops off too. I mean, she just kind of disappears a little bit. We don't really have a resolution to her fertility issues and her husband. And then forgive me, what was Carrie's friend?
Seema.
Seema's the best one of them all.
Seema feels like she should have just she really should have been given that fourth seat at the table the whole time, and they could have really expanded her. I think she's like,
I agree.
First of all, I mean, an incredible actress, but and like has been working a long time, just like super sexy. She's got like, and I love the character because she's got like tons of money. She's like glamorous. She represents a certain, you know, segment of the population in Queens, which is there are a lot of wealthy people of color in Queens. And yeah, I would watch like a whole show that was just following her dating different people and what that's like at 55. And her,
Joshua's
I was
one of the best scenes with Carrie, which is the scene where I don't remember which episode it was, but like, the framed picture of her in Big gets broken, and it's sort of the tag at the end of the episode where essentially Seema talks about, you know, how she's looking for love as well, and sort of the sadness that's inside this character a little bit. It's a really beautiful scene. You know, the Diwali episode leaves something to be desired. But just in terms of not really digging into Seema's culture in any real way other than the cool outfits.
That did really bother me for sure, because
part of the issue,
I was just gonna say that episode really bothered me because I think it's like we're gonna title it after probably the most famous Indian holiday, and that at least that white people know, and then we're gonna wind up using that as a point for the white character to like have some kind of epiphany that has nothing to do with the holiday. And instead of really like, they spent a lot of time like kind of building up this idea of like Seema lying to her parents about like having a boyfriend or like whatever. And this kind of like cultural mindset that's there. And then it was kind of like, they just like dropped it. They didn't spend much time at the Diwali party. And then like, then it was like, oh, well now Carrie's Diwali. And then Carrie has some like epiphany about light, you know, it's about taking light, which Diwali has, you know, a certain celebration of light. And it was just like, okay, there's a way to do this, and it's not this. It's just not
I agree.
This.
What were you going to say, Carrie?
I mean, I think the biggest problem is that Seema's storyline gets short shifted a lot because they have to give more. They have to have time for all of the other characters, and I think what we're all saying is Seema should have been the fourth character. Unquestionably, like it should have just been Seema, but the problem seems to be everyone dancing around. We don't want to say Seema is the new Samantha.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's and I mean, yeah, the irony to me, and I appreciate you sort of bringing up the elephant in the room to some degree, because it feels like Samantha is this shadow that kind of hangs over the entire show, and understandably so. She was the fourth cast member. She was, you know, obviously a fan favorite. There's many podcasts and many things to be written about the strife between Sarah Jessica Parker and Kim Cattrall, which Sarah Jessica Parker threw even more gasoline on recently by saying she doesn't want her to come back for the next season of this show if she does. It's like, anyway, all that being said, you can't really have it both ways, and that's what they're trying to do. This text message arc that exists between Carrie and Samantha, in theory, doesn't bother me so much because I understand they don't want to like kill her off or completely, you know, write her out of the show. But you didn't need them to be at odds with one another. They just could have been texting. Like Samantha could have just like happily moved to London or wherever, or Paris, and was just like living a happy life. Why did they have to have strife between the two of them is sort of beyond me. I know that it's forcing a weird arc on these text messages that I just don't think is helpful to the show. And it keeps Samantha in the ecosystem when I think they should have just put her away and just been done with it.
I think there was a way to deal with it that didn't involve the text messages. Like it is weird. Like I think I don't know. It's interesting losing a friend that close. at that age, also like that close that you've known for that long. That is interesting to me. How do you mm-hmm. deal with that sort of grief on top of, or even just on its own, mm-hmm. on top of losing your husband or just on its own? That's a traumatic experience. But then they made it such a, like, a non-fight.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, if they were going to have strife, it needed to be something bigger than like a misunderstanding. It just, I feel like they didn't want to flesh it out to be like, here's why they are at odds. Here's why it's really painful to carry, because it's painful to lose a friend, even if something happened that was like, that justified it. And also, like, how are the other characters? You only ever hear about Carrie's interactions with them. Like, you don't, with, or with Samantha, you don't see, I think it was like a one note, like, I think in the first episode or something, Miranda was like, oh yeah, I talked to her sometimes. Or like, I tech, like, I think there was like a throwaway line something. Yeah. Like, have you heard from her?
Yep.
Like, what's that like? Also, when you were friends with, when you are no longer friends with somebody, but your mutual friends are still trying to have relationships with both people. I think there's a very interesting storyline there about the loss of a friend, that if the show is about friendship, in addition to about mm-hmm. love and sex, that's a very important narrative to tell. They just completely chickened out of telling that because they didn't want to piss her off even more than they already had.
Right.
I also just wonder if Sarah Jessica, I mean, listen, I don't know the inner workings of the show. There is a part of me too, where I feel like Sarah Jessica Parker didn't want to perhaps spend too much real estate on this as well. Right. You know, she didn't want this narrative to become any bigger than it already was, I guess, to some degree. You decided to make this show without her. So yeah. By doing that, you're going to take your lumps. Like, there's going to be people that are just like, this is not the show that I don't, blah, blah, blah. Totally get it. And those people are completely justified. You need to own it. Like, own it with the Seema character. You know, say that this, you don't need to say it's the new Samantha, but like, have her fill that fourth seat at the table, whatever it is, and just, and that character is going to become a punching bag. That character is going to become something that people are upset about, but own it and then hope that you can move forward past it. But instead, this entire show exists in some weird fucking purgatory where it's like between owning things and not really owning things and trying to be quote unquote woke and also trying to be the show that it was in the past. It's unfortunate. Like, so I want to talk about Rock for a second. Mm-hmm. The Charlotte component, which is her daughter Rose decides that she's non-binary. I thought the performance was, I liked the actress that played Rock. I liked what it brought out in Charlotte's character. I liked the trans rabbi was a standout. I hope she gets her own television show. She's fantastic. I liked the whole, I thought all that stuff worked quite well, all things considered. I liked it more than the stuff she was dealing with her other daughter, whose name Lily, is that it?
I think
it's Lily.
Yeah.
Cause that just seemed to be, I don't know, maybe, I guess you lose your string of your tampon. I guess that's a thing that happens. I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, I apologize. I don't mean to seem ignorant, but I'm just like, it just felt a little bit like, that felt like a storyline that might actually have existed on the original show. So like, it didn't necessarily bother me. It was just, they made such a meal out of it that it felt like an A story that I was just like, I don't know what we're doing here. But what did you think about Charlotte and her kids and how they unpacked that stuff?
I liked a lot of Charlotte's stuff, actually, for as much as it sometimes has like, for the most part, my whole reaction to the show is like, what are we doing here? but I actually enjoyed, I kind of found a lot of Charlotte's storylines to kind of be like a nice breath of fresh air in between too much Che Diaz and too much.
You can never have too much Che Diaz.
We're like Carrie is still mourning big and then having text messages with Samantha, which it is to Kim Cattrall's credit that I could hear the text, like you could hear them in Samantha's voice, like to her credit. But yeah, like I liked a lot of Charlotte's storylines. I think it's like a good direction to take for a person that has in the past in the show really been obsessed with like creating a perfect family, a perfect marriage. Like, what does that look like? Everything has to be just so. She's, you know, a Park Avenue wealthy woman. Like, what does it mean to have children that kind of don't necessarily conform to this like perfect idea of, mm-hmm. you know, like a white family? Surprisingly, and I mean, I'm not Jewish, but I find a lot of the a lot more of the Jewish stuff that I'm a little bit like, should we be making jokes about like challah? And like, there were just some like jokes that I was like, what are we doing?
As the sole Jewish person on this, I believe, Carrie, I don't believe you're Jewish. Are you? Okay.
No.
I'll just say that I actually had a conversation with a group of friends the other day about this, because a non-Jewish friend of mine had the same problem that you did, in terms of like when Rock at the end sort of rejects having her fey mitzvah or whatever they decide to call it. And my friend was like, it seems like a perfect opportunity for Charlotte to sort of expound on her love for Judaism and what it means to her and why it's important to her, even if right. Rock didn't. And I get all of that. I guess my argument to this would be, you know, we did her conversion in season six, which, right. and as someone who has a stepfather who converted, the converts are always a lot more Jewish than the people that are.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
So the sort of conversion of Charlotte and her sort of larger than lifeness when it comes to her Judaism doesn't bother me. But I can see how it is cartoonish.
Right. I think considering everything else going on in the show, yes, with yes, like yes. trying, you know, trying to really like appeal to the criticisms that the show is too white and it's not, it doesn't look and feel enough like actual New York City, which is so diverse. And, you know, it just kind of like one more thing that's like, ugh. But sure. I think like, I kind of think that they alluded to more of like that there were issues between like Lily and Rock. Mm-hmm. I think maybe like vying for Charlotte's attention or just like not like that there was some tension there and that also seemed to go away. And I think that Lily kind of got the short end of the stick in terms of her kids, like storylines with her kids, because like
she's just a kid.
Because the Rock story took a lot of precedence and like I understand why. And
Rock's cooler yes. than Lily anyway.
Rock is very cool. And
Rock
I love,
also like didn't ruin Carrie's life twice.
Yeah, that's that is true. And I hope that Harry Neff, who plays the trans rabbi, I really hope that that character comes back, but also that Harry gets Hari. I hope that Hari gets her own show because she's hilarious. But yeah, I don't know. Like I thought the Rock thing was actually handled with a little more subtlety and grace than I think a lot of the other issues in the show.
I appreciated, and then I obviously want to hear what you think, Carrie, but I appreciated the moment when they go to the school, when Charlotte and Harry go to talk to the, I guess it's the principal or the teacher or whatever. And the teacher is just like, we don't know what Rock's future is. We don't, but this is how they feel right now. And we should embrace that. And Harry's line of being like, having a teacher tell me how I'm supposed to feel about my own kid is, you know, is tough. I think they did a relatively good job of showing how scary, discombobulating, alienating it can feel to all of a sudden feel like you don't know your child. Like, I think that I thought was interesting. But Carrie, what did you think of Lily and Rock?
No, I mean, I thought the Rock stuff was handled well, and building on Emmy's point about who Charlotte was always painted to be, I think it also really helps deal with the fact that Charlotte has always been sort of a caricature of and obsessed with the ideal amount of like ideal femininity, Mm-hmm. She's hyper feminine. She's like always in the original show, like always sort of shaming the other women. Like, that's not ladylike, or that's vulgar. Like, Miss Prim, ultimate lady, how do you, like, I thought that was a good juxtaposition for her to, I would have liked it. I don't know if they had her reflect on herself a little bit. Yeah. I think they touched on it. There was a scene at brunch or something where she was like, did you always want to be, did you ever not want to be a girl? But I don't know, maybe that's like as deep as Charlotte can get about that sort of thing. Cause she just can't, I don't know. Maybe Charlotte has always been like, I love being a girl.
I get the impression that is how she feels, but yeah, I mean,
yeah.
So she can't fathom it,
but I don't know. I liked it as a moment of Charlotte needing to reconcile all these different parts of herself with being tolerant of others, also like tolerant of and supportive of others, and understanding and having grace for her own child, even if she can't understand it, of having compassion for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that they did. I mean, the funny part is that Charlotte at the beginning of the series, I want to say like the first two episodes, was grating as fuck. Like, I was just like annoyed by her in a deep way. And I was just like, I don't know if I can keep riding this. But then they did find a way to sort of temper her a little bit, to show some depth, and make her feel just not as grating. So I want to pivot to Carrie for a second. There are two characters that I'm interested in your thoughts on. The first is the woman downstairs, whose name I don't remember. She's a young woman who's like a jewelry designer or something to that effect. And sort of there's this, I genuinely don't remember her name, so my apologies to whoever this person
I think
was.
It was like a throwaway.
Yeah.
The impression you get is it's an infusion of a character that was around the ages, or probably a little bit younger than Carrie was when we sort of entered the series, and sort of her seeing a little bit of herself and apparently a lot of her boyfriend. I'm not sure why we needed to see his dick as much as we did, but that's all fine and good. I'm all for it. Sure. And just sort of the, Carrie seeing herself in this younger woman a little bit. The reason I bring it up is I went to see The Worst Person in the World last night, which I don't know if you guys have seen this film yet.
Not yet. On my list.
It's tremendous. I think you'll both love it. But the reason I bring it up is because I think that movie does such a tremendous job of really crystallizing what it's like to be in your late 20s, early 30s right now, and as a woman, and sort of the complexities of femininity and wanting kids or not wanting kids, and what it means to be in a relationship, and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of feel like this mini series, whatever, drops the ball on that, which feels like is such an important part of the series. Like, I felt like this young woman's character really could have been something a lot more interesting. And instead, it kind of had this weird, almost like dangerous quality to it that I just don't know how I felt about. Like, her boyfriend seemed kind of abusive, and like Carrie sneaking into her apartment late at night, it just all felt very sort of like kind of weirdly dangerous and fraught. And I guess I'm just wondering if you guys felt like if we needed this at all, like if they should have just removed it entirely from the series, and whether or not you felt like it needed an infusion of sort of that youthful vibe that the show originally had.
I mean, I only got the vibe from the boyfriend that it was a little bit like, I mean, they weren't gutsy enough to go there, but it should have been like, Big was kind of, you had the same arguments with Big, you dumb bitch.
Yeah. Like,
Big was pretty shitty to you for a long time. I know we all romanticize Big. I absolutely will take credit. I will. Yeah. Own the fact that I have romanticized him, but he was also a fucking asshole to you, like, and verbally abusive, emotionally manipulative, blah, blah, blah. I thought that was maybe where they were going to take that. Mm-hmm. And just a sort of moment of, because wasn't there a line in the funeral where like that, the other thing, like the other, like, Mitzi, why is this, why is this like random character from season two or whatever showing up to the funeral and being like, he was an asshole to her. Like,
yeah, Susan Sharon shows up and says, am I the only one that remembers he was an asshole?
Remembers when he was an asshole. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
It's just,
things that got dropped.
Things that got dropped. And the problem is it just keeps coming up for me as we're talking. It's like, this show tried to so hard to be for everyone, mm-hmm. and it didn't want to upset anyone, and it wanted everyone to like it. And the end result is that it pleased almost no one.
Yeah.
It's a fucking mess because it tried to be everything for everyone. And I think that the young character coming in, I don't think they needed it. I don't think it like did anything really. Like, there was no real realization for Carrie. There was no,
there
was no need. It didn't pay off.
It seemed like a mode of making, you know, it was like an easy way to make Carrie have to wrestle with like her age and, where she came from in with her past relationships, and like, oh, I remember what it was like to be this age. I assume that's what we're supposed to get from all of it. But it was just kind of like, you know, like, isn't there a better way, which again is another question I have for the series. Isn't there a better way of doing any of this?
All of this?
Exactly. All of this, any of this, some of this. Yeah, it just seems like it was like trying to be symbolic. It reminds me of like Mad Men episodes that like handled it better, of like putting this character that is clearly supposed to be symbolic of something to Dawn. But Mad Men also tended to handle these things with a lot more subtlety. You know, that's, it's supposed to be symbolic of something. And I assume that it's, you know, just supposed to be Carrie wrestling with like, well, I'm 50.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When I was this age and like,
right.
But like, yeah, to your point, Carrie, like Big was an asshole to her for like a good majority of the series, and really, I think it shaped everyone's ideas about fuck boys and, you know, but like of an even different kind, a really wealthy kind. And it's just like, I don't know that it was necessary. I really don't. I think there was a different way to do it.
It's just do it or don't do it. And I think that's both of your points, right? Which is like, if you're going to do something, fully commit to it. And this show does fully commit to things, Che, but more than anything, it unfortunately doesn't commit to some other things that might have been a little bit richer or a little bit more sort of illuminating to character. Like, I think ultimately what I'm getting at here with this younger character is that there was an opportunity here, and it feels like they kind of left money on the table and just didn't really unpack it for what it was worth. You know, and it's also interesting, we talk about how sort of sexless this Sex and the City offshoot is, and it is, but in this particular episode, we see this guy's This guy's dick a bunch. We see Harry's dick in this episode too. But again, in the most like sexless, unenjoyable way where you're just like, okay, so there's a, it felt like the show became Euphoria for an episode where it's just like a bunch of dicks for the sake of dicks. And I was just like, I don't know why we're doing this. Like what to what end?
Yeah, HBO Max's, HBO's dick budget must be huge.
It's gone through the roof.
This it's year because it seems, it seems like everywhere I turn on an HBO show, there is a new dick in my face.
Yes.
Because Righteous Gemstones has also had, it's just like, wow, dick, yeah. Dick City. And I'm like, good for you. But
is it something is it like a thing about like women won't do nudity anymore, but like, or won't. Women are like,
maybe.
So men are just like, I'll whip it.
I don't have any problem showing you my dick.
But it's also not their dick. Like, that's the thing, too, where it's like, that is not Harry's dick. That is clearly a prosthetic. Same with on Euphoria. There are some real dicks. But I'm just like, it's just interesting to me. And then there's also, stand-in dicks, where you'll like cut to a tight shot of
right,
like,
White Lotus. Think
it's Steve Zahn's dick, but it's not his dick. It's just interesting. I don't really know what to make of any of it. I do think it's interesting that we've clearly crossed some sort of Rubicon where like you will have there because for the longest time, female nudity was just a norm where it was just like, you know, because men decided that women had to be naked all the time on film whenever they chose. So like there is something interesting about we've now crossed into some sort of a situation where now it's just dicks aplenty. Now you're just like dicks everywhere. Great times. I do want to pivot to Franklin for a second, which if you remember is the guy that Carrie goes out with.
Who's Franklin?
Yeah, I was who's Franklin?
Exactly. he is, I believe, let me just make sure that his name is Franklin, because I do think it is.
It would be funnier if it wasn't.
I just want to make sure that it is his name. She goes on a date with Franklin, yes, and shares a romantic kiss. His name being Franklin makes him sound like Paddington to me. There's just something very, he's also built like that. The character is just so sweet and so nice. He's also a widow. And I'm just like, listen, I don't have any ill feelings towards Franklin. He seems like a nice guy, but like not a guy that you're like, I can't wait for Carrie to end up with Franklin. I can't wait for Carrie to end up with the guy that she barfs with after a date.
No, the name reminds me of, and when Harry met Sally, when she tells him that she's sleeping with Sheldon and he said, no, it's the problem with the name. You don't hear ride me, babe, Sheldon. Like, that's not what I think of when I think of the name Franklin. It's not a sexy name. I think the actor is very sexy. I think he's he's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
I like his energy, but yeah. Well, and also then, they share the double vomit. They both vomit.
The double vomit was a good moment.
But like, it's almost like a callback to there's like a joke on the comeback about something with like a vomit. Isn't that right? I think I sent you all some meme that was talking about like on the comeback, they mentioned something about
vomit. Yes.
Which is also a Michael Patrick King show. But
I would say a better show than this. I guess my feeling about Franklin is that they essentially decided that they needed to someone that was the antithesis to Big, someone that you couldn't hate. Someone that the audience would be like, I mean, Big is dead and I need to move on. And this guy seems sweet. Like, he's impossible to dislike, really.
Yeah.
And that's a bummer, right? Like, as a character, there just doesn't seem to be a lot. There's not like a lot there. But they also don't, I don't know. They don't seem particularly invested in this guy.
But how many other boyfriends? I think you needed someone that you weren't going to be invested in because she wasn't gonna end up long term with the first guy she dates after Big's death. And how many boyfriends flings did she have in like the first two seasons, especially where like they were on for one episode?
Yeah,
you're not wrong.
It's like she's not going to end up with this guy.
Yeah, yes, that's totally fair. I think that there's. So I want to talk for a second about this bizarre Aiden situation, which is that John Corbett was interviewed, I think, in the New York Post and was like, yes, I'm going to be on the show. and I'm going to be in multiple episodes. And then the EP, and then the EPs at the end of the series was like, we never even talked to John Corbett. We don't know what he's like. He's manifesting something that I don't even understand. So I can't decide if this is a weird negotiation ploy, which is that John Corbett wanted to be on the show. So he was like, I'm going to say that I'm going to be on the show. Or there was a negotiation to have him on the show and the talks fell through and they couldn't lock in a deal. So they're playing as though they never spoke to him in the first place.
I think
I don't really
C.
get it. What's C?
I think it's C. I think it was a deliberate act to throw off spoil, to like put out fake spoilers.
That's interesting. Okay, I'll give
you
that.
They were saying the same thing, like when there were all those shots of Big, they were filming in Paris, they were like, oh, people were saying they're doing it deliberately to like throw us off. They're filming scenes that they don't need, like that aren't going to end up in. I mean, of course it.
Right, and outfits show, and different things, yeah.
Yeah, where they were like, they're doing stuff to throw people off.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, ultimately, my feeling is that my guess is if there is another season, I imagine Aiden is a part of it in some way or another. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I guess I just sort of, I missed, you know, caring about Carrie's love life, which is, spoiler, the fucking series. So like, I just, like, yeah. There's just a part of me that was like missing that. And I think I mentioned this to you guys on our thread, but like if you had given us the first two or three episodes and did a significant time jump and then the finale was like episode 4 and you use that for sort of the tail half of this show. And I just think it would have been a much more satisfying series. I just think it was just very meandering and very sort of all over the place in the middle. Zariski and Rotenberg, Julie Rotenberg and Eliza Zariski wrote some of my favorite episodes of the show. My motherboard myself is one of my favorite episodes. I think that they're tremendous writers and I think that they infuse some interesting stuff into the show. And I don't want to suggest that the writers are bad. I don't think it's that this was necessarily a poorly written show. I just think it's what Carrie was saying, or both of you were saying, which is that the show really is trying to do too much. It just, mm-hmm. it can't bottle the acid. It can't figure out what it is. And in the process, it just feels so scattershot. And we've found these little pockets of things that were emotionally resonant or were funny or a character that we liked because we love the show and we're desperate to find things that there are to like about it. But ultimately, it just feels very unsatisfying.
For sure. For sure.
I mean, it's hard not to just feel that way, in my humble opinion. But.
Because I really liked the season finale. I thought, like, overall, as like an episode, it kind of captured that, like, that, that poignant tone, I think, especially towards the end of season 6, sure. That was going on with Carrie kind of wrestling with, well, do I want to just like be in Paris and do nothing mm-hmm. with Petrovsky and potentially have like an unsatisfying life? Or like, do I want to move on and, you know, go back to New York? And I think like this kind of had that same energy. And
I agree with that.
You know, oh God, the other thing I just remembered is like, remember there was that big buildup to Miranda going to Cleveland to see.
Yeah.
This huge like romantic gesture. And I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to see Sex and the City do Cleveland. Like, give me that Midwestern Sex and the City as, you know, a Midwestern person. I'm like, sure. I just, yes, let me see how they portray Cleveland, Ohio. I want this in my life. And then they just dropped it.
Again, it's like, farther. The promo for the next episode makes it look like she crashes on Che with somebody else. Like they make it seem as though they're giving you an episode that they don't give you.
That wasn't even there. Again, it's just like dropping the ball like on so many things.
It is very interesting how how the show just feels like it's trying to do so much and fails at doing almost everything. Yeah. But I also just feel like I don't know. I miss. Okay, so here's a question to both of you. if you had your druthers at the end of the series, forget the movies, the end of the series, would she have ended up with Big? Or would she have been single?
Oh. Like the season finale? Like season finale, how would I write show? That finale?
Because, and I'll let you guys chew on that and I'll just yammer on for a second.
No, I would say, yeah. I would have her end up with Big. I think it makes sense narratively. I wouldn't frame it as they're going to be together forever. I think that's her pattern of behavior.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of in agreement on that. Cause I think I think their pattern throughout the show has been very hot and cold, and her, I think she has a lot of issues surrounding Big that are, you know, Big brings out a lot of the worst parts of Carrie too. And I think like they don't, for sure in this series, they just gloss over like literally all of that. It's like Big is this beautiful angel of a man that like, I'm like, no, he, you know, I feel like Susan Sharon. I'm like, am I the only person that remembered he was an asshole to her? I think like, yeah, I think they would have wound up together. And then I think eventually would have split.
I feel like, first and foremost, I think it should be said that I do think that's what the show is attempting to do. Like at the very end of the show, it's her on the phone with him after John comes up on her. After six seasons of Mr. Big, we find out his fucking name is John. On her bedazzled pink razor phone. And
listen, he says, Bill, it was the time.
Yeah.
Some of us had them.
And he says, I'm coming back to New York. And there is a bit of an ellipse there. There's a, you know, they do kiss at the end, and you do certainly get a feeling of that these two are gonna get back together. I guess the reason I ask you the question is there's a kind of head and heart with me and the way that I watch the show. I mean, obviously being a TV writer to some degree, I understand everything you guys are saying, which is that, you know, the piping has been laid for her to end up with Big, right? Seasons and seasons of this show, this is where it's barreling towards, whether you like it or not. But then I think intellectually, I really feel like Carrie's terrible at relationships. Like she's fucking bad at them. And on some level, I get that we want her to quote unquote get good at them by the end of the show. And I guess that's what they're hoping. But there's no conflict in that. There's no interest in that. The movies show these two people happily married and you're just like, I'm bored. I don't give a shit about Carrie and Big being happy together. Like that's just not, I don't care about that. So I guess the reason I just feel like,
don't they still have conflict in the movies? Like he leaves her at the altar. He gets cold feet. He leaves her at the altar.
What sort of?
Yeah, and then she has a kiss with
Aiden. So wishy-washy. He's right.
And then she gets like
she has a kiss with Aiden in the second movie, and then she like goes out of her mind. She does her Carrie thing of like overanalyzing it. I'm like, just don't. I'm like, either tell him or don't tell him. But like this, like. She like kiss, creates her own drama.
Ever. Yeah.
Yeah. She creates her own drama.
Therapy.
Yeah.
She needs to go to therapy.
That's where the series should have ended.
The one episode she goes to therapy.
The one episode where she talks about her. No, but the one episode where she talks about how her dad left her family when she was little. It's like, no shit.
Right. Where if you watch the Carrie Diaries like I did, then you would know that that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the case.
The Carrie Diaries, is that canon?
Probably not, but I enjoyed
she's
it.
She's got a sister named Dorrit, which we never see.
Yeah, Dorrit. I forgot about that.
I love Dorrit.
I forgot about the Carrie Diaries.
The Carrie Diaries is pretty fun, at least for the first like season that I watched. I think
there was more than one season.
Yeah. There's two seasons of Carrie Diaries. And in the second season, the actress to play a young Samantha looks so much like a young Kim Cattrall. It's frightening. You should Google it, Carrie. It's amazing.
Yeah.
She literally looks like it's such Muppet Babies Sex in the City. It's insane, but whatever.
Yeah. It is Muppet Babies Sex in the City.
But like it's great.
Oh my god. She really does.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
Wow.
They should have brought her on. They just cast her.
She'd probably be almost. Well, she's not old enough to be like she's in her 60s,
but
she
could have done flashbacks.
Yeah,
could have done. Carrie's face right now is incredible.
You're so horrified.
She's horrified. The Carrie Diaries is fun. Everyone should go and watch it. I actually did an interview with Amy B. Harris. She was lovely. But all that being said, I just think it's interesting that, like, the show tries to have its cake and eat it too in its series finale, which is sort of leaving an ellipse. You're not really sure. Are they going to make it? Are they not? Who knows, right? And then the movies try to... The movies are like weird fan fiction that I just don't really understand. Like, who wanted to see her kiss Aiden in Abu Dhabi is beyond me. the whole thing is just some weird, like...
Who is this for?
Right. Who is this for? And this show feels oddly like also fan fiction, just written by 55-year-old women or something. I really don't know. So something that was dinged this show was a lot of people talked about how these three women seemed, you know, too woke and trying too hard. And my counter to that is, I guarantee you that they would be like these people. Like, I don't actually think it's a stretch to think that Miranda, Carrie, and Charlotte would twist themselves into pretzels to seem woke in 2021.
Yeah, although I think with Miranda, though, like, to me, Miranda seems like the person that's like, she lives in Brooklyn in like a really nice townhouse. There's no way that she's not part of like the wealthy Brooklyn set who, like, she goes to the farmer's market and like does the whole thing. And like, as somebody who I'm sure has listened to like NPR her entire life and has the tote bag and like probably... You know, probably has, like, I'm voted for Obama, loves Michelle Obama. Like, she seems like that kind of, like, white woman liberal. But I just kind of refuse to believe she would be that cringy about, like, racial issues. Like, there's no way living in her neighborhood she isn't also around, like, some other wealthy, wealthy black women, like, that live in that area. It's just, like... She in particular, I felt like just would have a little more skill at navigating that than like the other two, who to me would seem a little more. Charlotte for sure seems like she would be the most clueless, and yet she sometimes handled things better than the other
two. Yeah, I mean, remember when Cynthia Nixon was almost your mayor?
No, governor. Our governor.
Governor, oh my God. I thought it was
our governor.
If she were our governor, we would have avoided all of this.
All of this. It's true.
All of it. I also think like Miranda's a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Miranda has always, I don't know. I feel like Miranda would have been the one like early on being like.
Exactly.
Early in like 2020 when there was a lot of like political strife and a lot of social reckoning, I think she would have been like, of course, like, I've known about this for years. I think she would have been schooling all of them instead of being like, I just read this book, The End of Policing. I just read The End of Policing. And it's like, that would be Charlotte. Miss, like, the lingua franca.
She is a lingua franca.
You know she owns, you know Charlotte owns a, like... You know, Charlotte probably owned like four different lingua franca sweaters.
When they go high, when they go low, resist. I go high. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, Charlotte seems like a hashtag resistor. Yeah. And Miranda seems
Blue
like
wave
she
mom.
Would. Yeah, Miranda would have gone. She would have done like the pink pussy hat. But I think Miranda, just by default of having been a lawyer her entire career and dealing with different types of people and like being in these situations, like, she just seems like she would have had more of a handle on it than what the writers on this show wrote for her. And it's like,
yeah, it's I think that what we're all kind of circling, first of all, Miranda was always my favorite character, and what I loved about Miranda was how, you know, her sort of how acerbic, how sarcastic, how sort of, you know, cutting she could be. And they weirdly softened her in this in all the wrong ways. They made her this like oddly hopeless romantic, which I just found sort of just not what I expected from her character. And again, like, it's not as though I don't want to be surprised by the character and that she can't change. I just found myself just baffled by the choices that she was making. And just even just like all that Naya stuff at the beginning in the classroom and in the subway and all that sort of like awkwardness and clumsiness, like, it's just, this doesn't feel like Miranda to me, but I don't know.
I mean, I think all of the awkwardness and clumsiness also comes out of the fact that, like, it's not like you can't be surprised by a character and a character can't change, but they made her a narcissist. They straight up made her a narcissist. That's all the Che stuff. And the whole ruining Steve's life to be a hopeless romantic with Che. But it also, I think, accounts for why she's awkward and fumbling, because she wants to be seen as like white lady savior without being a white lady savior. Like,
no, totally.
It's like she wants to be the star student in a very like narcissistic, yeah, I'm doing this for my own benefit way. And that's not Miranda. Like, they straight up made her a narcissist. Yeah.
And they even tried to have, like, it's like the writers also seem to be anticipating this pushback, because then they had her have this like whole monologue being like, aren't I allowed to change? Aren't I, you know, can't I like, and I'm like, yes, you can. Yeah. And we expect, like, I don't expect a character to stay the same from age 30 to 55. That's like bananas. No, of course not. Like, women have huge changes. Like, I feel like a very different person at age 33 than I did at age, you know, even just age 27 or something. Like, there's a lot of growth that happens in like 2 or 3 year increments, and all of a sudden it's like huge. But it is like, we took the show Bible and the character Bible and we just like chucked it into the fire, and it was like, yep, chaos and free for all. And I agree. I think they turned her into this like complete, like, hopeless romantic narcissist over Che Diaz, who I'm like, it is a credit to Sada Ramirez that I like, they can be giving, like, can be playing a character that I am like, this is like Jar Jar, the Jar Jar Binks of, and just like that, like, just so grating. So, and I know some of this is like on purpose, yeah, but like Sada is still like giving a performance that I'm like invested in. I think it's like good, but it's just like the way that, you know, this, like, it feels like character whiplash. That's what I feel, yep, like I have with Miranda. Absolutely. Because Carrie, I think you made a meme of, like, you put the side by side of Miranda saying to Carrie, being like, what are you going to do in Paris? Just like eat croissants all day? Yes. And they literally had a similar scene.
Parallel, yeah.
The parallel of like Carrie saying basically the same thing to Miranda, which is like, what are you going to do in LA all day? Like, go,
but do you think
go to this comedy show? And but then it was like, drop, you know, and then Carrie was,
she was like, that's very judgmental.
There was like, no, I'm like, let these women fight.
You're the queen of judgment. You fucking like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's like, let these women like have an actual fight. I know that you already have this fight between them and Samantha, or like this, you know, tension between them and Samantha. It's like, again, I think circling something, which is like, what does friendship look like with people who you've known for 20 some odd years? You knew them when they were in their 30s, and now you know them at 55. Like, what does that look like? And of course you're going to have fights, and like, let them fight. This seems like something that they would have
fight.
Yeah, it's like, let because, yeah, because Carrie and Miranda have had a lot of big fights on the show. And it's like, this seems like something that, even if you're like, oh, maybe it's just not worth it to have the fight, I think they would have the fight. Like, well, the history is there.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree. I wonder, this show was never great at continuity, if we're being honest, in terms of its backstory, in terms of its, like, remember when Charlotte had a brother, you know, like, you know, just weird things that kind of, they just don't care about that stuff, which leads me to believe that they're more interested in the moment than they are in 6 seasons and 2 movies of build up to said moment. I'm not making excuses for it, but there's a part of me that feels like, they siloed this off. This is its own fucking thing. They hope that people don't think too hard about it. And they hope, and it's crazy to think that when you've made this show, which obviously, but I really do believe that there's just a lot of stuff that they just didn't think about. There's this article that I pulled up of the most cringeworthy moments of this miniseries.
All of it.
And some of them I agree with. Carrie not calling 911 at the beginning does feel like one of those pretty significant things where you're just like, what? Anyway, so
I'm of two minds about that. That's
okay.
Yes, it's like call 911, but also like in a moment of intense trauma like that, some people are fucking, some people's response is to like freeze. And you completely forget how to like do literally anything.
I don't
again,
disagree.
But again, is the show actually thinking Carrie's having a trauma response?
No.
Carrie's trauma response is like, she shows up. Here's how Carrie acts in trauma. She has the fawn deer in headlights reaction. Like, no, they don't give a shit about any of that. So I will say, yes, it's cringe also.
Carrie's desperate need to be friends with Lizette, which is the girl downstairs, which I think is an interesting call. Carrie and Samantha going out for drinks off screen. I forgot about the woke moment button that Che has on her podcast.
Oh, God.
Just fucking brutal. They bring this up.
And also, year do they think this exists?
Why do they have Colin?
Yeah.
Colin questions. In
like, on a podcast. Why, like, woke moment? Is it 2017?
It's crazy.
Like,
it's crazy. They do bring up Steve, and we need to talk about Steve for a second here.
Yeah.
Because Steve they turn Steve into like a character. Like the moment at the farmer's market was like, oh, I forgot my wallet and I can't hear anything. And I don't know. It's like he's turned into such a fucking debacle of a character. I just don't understand. Is this so that we sort of understand why she cheats on him?
I don't know. Because it's like, Steve and Harry are like doing a new version of Grumpy Old Men or something they're in like a separate. That was like a tweet. There was like some tweet I saw that was like, they're like in Grumpy Old Men, a reboot of Grumpy Old Men, and everyone else is doing something else. And like, it is true though. Like they have turned like Steve, who I think canonically was like one of the hottest dudes on the show and also like the best at sex.
Yes, like, very good at sex.
A little dopey, but like...
A little dopey, but there was a reason that Miranda kept going back to him. And part of it was that he was like really good at sex and also hot. And like, it's just like... And also Harry was like also at one point just like really good at sex. And like Charlotte was like, oh my God, I have like never...
I've had the best sex of my life I had with this guy.
Sex of my life. And it's just like... So are we supposed to like hate them now? I understand that Dave Eigenberg was like, I have hearing aids, so I need to like, we have to incorporate this into the show. And that's fine. I think like, great. You know, this is like a normal aging thing.
Yeah. But I forgot to know how to please my wife is a step too far as I'm concerned.
And like first of all, pleasing your wife, you have like the greatest dessert tray set up I've ever seen in my life. Like, I will come over to your apartment every night and have ice cream.
Yeah, I'll fucking eat dessert. Sure. Great.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't like...
Part of it too is, and it's worth saying, that the breakup scene between Steve and Miranda, Steve is making really solid points.
Yeah.
Like, Steve is just like, listen, I've been putting up with your bullshit for years and I'm fucking done. And I respect him for it, but she's just like, her head in the clouds. I just don't understand it.
Big, look how they massacred my boy energy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very much. Look how they massacred my boy.
Very much so. And then on top of it all, the added thing is they don't even fucking round off his story. He gets a scene with Carrie where with the fucking wedding ring and the painting of the house and the whatever. And they kind of talk about stuff, but then they basically pull the ripcord out of the conversation. And they're just done. And they don't, when the writers are like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And then he's given like some fucking off screen line or some shit. And I'm just like, they did him dirty on this show. Anyway, these are my thoughts about Steve. The other cringe things, Che bragging about their sexual prowess. Yeah, they are very, very, very good at sex, I guess.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I mean, we all crave Che. Let's just be real. The whole blowjob situation, I don't even really know what that was about, really. Like, was it so that Lily got a storyline for an episode where Charlotte had to talk to her about blowjobs? I don't know.
And they backed out of that too, remember?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
God, this fucking show. Have the sex talk with your kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have the sex talk with your kid. She's also 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way that after being on TikTok and like having a Finstagram,
there's no way.
Having a Finstagram, there's no way that Lily being a New York City teen does not have a basic understanding of what's going on. Yeah.
This article calls out Carrie's Diwali outfit.
Well, so my boyfriend is South Indian, and so we talked because he's like dipped in and out of watching this with me, and most of his he kept being like, "What happened to the Peloton bike? Where did it go?" So that was his concern. He did say he was like, there's a difference between how Diwali is celebrated in North India versus South India, and he was like, yes, also the outfits that they're showing are, even if it was like North Indian, it's wrong. It's not, these are not saris, they are something else, and the name is escaping me, but like they were, so, like, also why are they showing her outfit so much more than like Seema's and like the, like everyone at Seema's Diwali, like
crazy.
Yeah,
I want to talk very briefly because I don't know anything about fashion. And I don't mean to suggest that as women, you know more about fashion, but I think it's safe to say that you do. Because I know nothing. Carrie's outfits, or let's just say the outfits by and large on this show. There's one in particular where she talks about how she has this sort of crazy outfit that she walks around her neighborhood wearing with these fucking gloves and like... And I'm just like, she looks like a fucking lunatic. She looks like a crazy bag lady or something. And why would you go out in public that way? There's a lot of outfits that she wears in this. What are your thoughts on her?
In the whole show, she's had some bag lady outfits in the series.
She's wearing
the whole thing with the bag lady, or the smoking outfit, is she doesn't want to be recognized.
Okay.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's hiding that she's smoking and like covering up every inch so she doesn't get smoke on her. But I think it's also like, I don't want to be recognized while I'm out.
Well, she should take some lessons from the Olsen twins, because if anyone has made bag lady fashion extremely chic,
it's true.
The Olsens. And it's weird. That's like a line, a clothing line, The Row. Like, they could really put Carrie in some looks from that. And it would still be like chic and very much fall within her like weird bag lady fashion.
I didn't watch the entire documentary on the making of this before this episode because life's too short, but I did watch half of it. And it does open with a some sort of a storage unit that Sarah Jessica Parker has of every outfit that Carrie's ever worn on the show, which is pretty incredible. What did you think of her outfits in this series by and large?
I was living for them. I love them. I think Keaton Kild had a tweet or something the first episode where he was like, Carrie's back having brunch with a stupid fucking hat. Nature is absolutely healed.
Yeah, she did have a lot of stupid fucking hats. I actually thought she looked pretty good most of the season. The one pantsuit was a little Paula Poundstone for me, but I did kind of like enjoy it in that it's a little bit of a fashion swerve, which I think the show does a lot. I also thought the other two women, the looks that they chose, I think Miranda's in particular, felt very true to the character and also to like Cynthia Nixon's kind of style preferences, which I think also hew very close to Miranda. I will say that, you know, this show doesn't do fashion. Well, the show doesn't do a lot of things very subtly, but definitely not the fashion. And so the last look on the bridge, in Paris was like a lot, and I wasn't.
It's like a creamsicle. She looked like some sort.
She
of
looks
a...
like the creamsicle, and you know, the pink gloves. It was just a lot, and I was imagining people, Parisians were probably like, "What the fuck is this lady doing?" Like, because that's just not how people there dress. But yeah, I
that's
thought
our the, girl. Like that's
yeah,
our
that's
girl.
Our girl. I thought she looked pretty good.
I
thought she looked pretty good.
I would. How do we feel about the Eiffel Tower ashes purse situation?
Well, did I not? Didn't I send you the video of like somebody had edited this on Twitter and put, I think it's one of my friends who's a non-binary comedian. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. The show has, I've never seen an unfunny non-binary comedian until Che Diaz. All the non-comedians I've ever seen are like the funniest fucking comedians.
Sure.
So my friend Jay made this video of her dumping the ashes with the purse, but edit it so that it was Jennifer Coolidge's monologue from White Lotus on top of it. I'm talking about mother, mother, mother. And it the reason and it worked a little too well. That's my thoughts on it.
Would you use the purse again? It feels like that's no. Kind of, it's done now, right?
Oh, the purse is done. The purse is going to go. My question is not so much about the purse. My question is, did she keep a little bit of the ashes for herself? This isn't funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. I seriously was like, that's a serious thing I think about when people spread ashes. Like, do they toss all of them? Or do you keep like a little
bit? I believe
they
toss them all.
But like,
I mean, wouldn't you Carrie was keeping big in her fucking closet.
Yeah. Yeah, but like it's not like she, it's one of those things where I'm like, where do you have to go to like visit him? It's not like you planted a tree or something. You toss them in the fucking sand. They're like going into the sewer, you dumb bitch.
Like, well, at least it wasn't it like, you know, the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland, which people do, you know, she didn't toss big into the Haunted Mansion.
I love that this is the second time Carrie is called Carrie Bradshaw dumb bitch during this episode. It's giving me life. I'm all for it.
I love her so. I say this as a friend.
I know.
I say this as if she's my close personal friend. And also Carrie representation matters.
Carries are important.
Carries are important. I gotta call out the Carries who are giving us a bad name.
I think that this is, I don't know if anyone does what Carrie did with the ashes, right? I'm sure that there are some people that spread ashes into areas or what have you. It just feels very cinematic. It just feels like a thing that people do in movies and television shows. I don't know that they really do it in time. I also don't know if you're allowed to do it, quite frankly.
I was going to say, I think it's illegal to spread them in the ocean or something. I think people do it, but like, I think it's, there's something about like, you're not legally allowed to put bodily remains in bodies of water.
I think that there's a bunch of reasons why it's not okay. It doesn't seem hygienic. It doesn't seem like a good idea. I also just wonder too, like in terms of I don't know, it just seems gross. I gotta be honest, it just seems like a thing that you should just, they should be in an urn or a mausoleum or something. But all that being said, in terms of the outfits, I agree. They were absurd. The most absurd being Nicole Ari Parker's outfit of many pockets and zippers. It was like a fucking Inspector Gadget. I was just like, what is this?
She's very prepared.
All like makeup brushes or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you're painting. What do you think you're going? Like, at least put like paint brushes or something. Don't put like a blush brush in there.
It was absolutely bonkers. It was the most bonkers of all the outfits. I also love that Carrie took a sip of water from a mason jar that looked like it could have been Carrie Coorigan, to be clear to our listeners, that I thought was like moonshine because it was in like a mason jar. And I was like, I hope that Carrie's drinking moonshine. I think that ultimately it's just on a fashion level, that's what this show does. It goes big. It goes dramatic. If Carrie's not wearing a stupid hat, then ultimately what it comes down to. Did you guys, so in terms of characters that stood out for you, characters that you liked of the new batches, who sort of popped for you? Who would you want to see more episodes with?
Seema. I want silence.
I definitely I would like more Seema, and as I said, I would like more of Harinef as the trans rabbi.
Absolutely.
More Harinef in general in any capacity, but definitely on the show. I think it gave it she really gave it that kind of like old energy and humor that I was looking for. And I like her scenes were real standouts for me. And it's just a fun
character. You know, I found myself at the end of this miniseries surprised at how much I probably would enjoy more episodes with Naya and with Seema and even with Nicole Ari Parker's character. Che's really the only one that I just don't ever need to see again. I do think that they added something to the show. I think that they're, you know, they were not devoid of any sort of merits. I do think that if we get another season of this show and we do check in with these characters again, I'd be okay with that. And I'm not sure that I would have thought that at the beginning of this show. So it did something right insofar as that the finale weirdly made me feel like maybe there's something good to come out of all of this, and a genuinely good show could come out of it on the other side of this. That's a big fucking if, but it's possible. I don't know. Would you guys watch more episodes of this?
I would watch an episode a day, every single day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, to read from another, I pulled this tweet up because I think it really sums up my feelings, and I sent it to you all. This is also from a non-binary comedian that I think is very funny, James Tyson. They said, "And just like that is the worst show on television. If they released a new episode every day, I would watch it. It should never have been made. I want 17 more seasons. It deserves every Emmy." I don't know about the Emmy part, but that is basically how I feel about this train wreck of an experience that I had.
I also think, and it, you know, to wrap this up, I do think that this had to have done what HBO Max wanted it to do. They haven't told us the numbers, but like, it got people talking about the show. Che was all over Twitter. I imagine that the demo that they wanted to pull into HBO Max, which is perhaps women over 55, I think that there's it might have bumped up those numbers. I'd be shocked if we didn't get another season of it. The question ultimately is how much it would cost. And I can only imagine the exorbitant costs of this, the above the line alone of what each of these actors cost and their EP fees. And like, it seems crazy. That being said, I think it did what it was supposed to do, right? We were all talking about it. I mean, our text chain is, if nothing, you know, there's a lot of caps, but still.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I found my Halloween costume this year, which is to go as Che Diaz. it'd be so scary. Can you imagine just popping into a Halloween party and being like, "Hey, it's Che Diaz."
It's like that gift that I sent you guys that Carrie said, "This is an attack," where it's like Che just being like,
"Eh." And now people, you know, they've memed Che into oblivion. Che's now going, I hope Che shows up on the Gilded Age, you know? Let's just throw him
in. Are you guys watching the Gilded Age?
Yes, I am. Another show that is turn off your brain and just watch all these Broadway actresses in beautiful costumes.
So
it's great.
My roommate is an enormous Downton fan. Like,
yes, I am
Downton.
Too. Yeah.
I've only seen the first season of Downton. I liked it fine, but I just didn't stick with it. We're watching Gilded Age, but it's baffling to me. Like, first of all, the hook at the end of the pilot was no one came to my party.
Yeah.
What? Like, how is that enough of a hook to watch another episode of the show? Carrie Coon, who I adore, would lay down traffic for.
Yeah.
Is she good on this show, guys?
She is like Scorpio. Her character, I feel, is Scorpio representation of she and her husband are willing to really right some wrongs by doing the pettiest possible things. So I do feel very scene. I cannot say that anything on this show is very good, but that's just kind of Julian Phillips.
I was going to say, I've never seen any Downton Abbey. Yeah. No familiarity.
Sure.
I'm not a big historical drama person. So I'm like, I think maybe some context is lost on me. To me, this is like camp. This show is fucking camp.
And I do think that it's beautiful that basically every episode so far has ended with Donna Murphy sweeping in as Mrs. Astor and just being like, this is terrible. And then it ends. And I like, I think every TV show should actually end that way. With Donna Murphy sweeping into the room.
But Cynthia,
there's a great
Nixon.
Donna Murphy sweep cameo in Inventing Anna, I will say. Oh, like great. I was great. Truly like extreme Tiffany Faller voice. Donna Murphy.
So I just to bring this back to Cynthia Nixon in The Gilded Age feels like she is just like, guys, I'm in a period piece. This is really exciting. She is dialed to 11. She seems like she's been hit with a 2x4. I don't understand what the fuck her character is about. I don't know what she's doing. I'm baffled by it.
No, and I wish I had seen that production of Little Foxes that she did with Laura Linney, where they swapped roles like every night or something. It was like every other night they play the other role. And I wish I had seen that because I had heard that production was really good, and that's also would have been set, I think, is usually set around the same time. It is a very different Cynthia Nixon is giving a very different performance.
It's just like
on The Gilded Age than on
I mean, as she should be, but I'm just
right,
like,
yeah.
The Gilded Age is baffling. It's a bonkers television show. I'm all for it. It's great. Everyone should watch The Gilded Age. But I just want to say that I would watch more episodes of this iteration of Sex and the City gladly, similar to yourself, to both of you. I don't know if they're going to do it. I kind of hope they do. But I'll also say this. If this is the last time we check in with these characters, I am much happier with this endpoint than the second Sex and the City movie. But it's also a weird place to leave them. Like, I'm also just sort of like, what's Marin? She's got red hair again. Why?
Well, I think, didn't they change the ending at the last minute? Like, they were going to have her stay in New York. And I think it was probably like they were going to have her stay, be practical Miranda, and be like, yeah, maybe the change I need in my life is just to dye my fucking hair back. Like, maybe I don't need to throw my life upside down. But then there was that, it was like in W or something, it was Vanity Fair, where they were like, we decided to go against what like everyone expected of Miranda. So I think maybe like, I think they reshot it at like the last minute. So maybe that was like the original.
I mean, I know that there were reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was also, I mean, obviously there was editing. They edited out Chris Noth. I think that like, there's a part of me that feels like, the reception, because like obviously this was not, they were not done shooting this when they started airing them, because I think that the reception to certain things changed the way certain things were done. I respect the doubling down on Miranda and Che, because like if you're on Twitter and your takeaway from the discourse is these two should end up together, I don't know.
Man, we've been saying this whole time, if you're going to do something. And that seems to be the only...
the only thing they did.
The only thing they're committed to is Che.
Is Che. And I mean, like, I know that that character is supposed to be written to be annoying on some level. And I think I said this in our text chain, where I was like, I don't know if I would be less annoyed if they weren't a podcaster, a comedian... or both. I think it's like, it doesn't matter. It's just, I don't know. It was like, why did we go all in on Che Diaz? Why?
Yeah. You made a really interesting allusion earlier about the Jar Jar Binks of this television show. Cause, and it really is a good connection, because I remember in 1999, they were right? All Jar Jar was on the cover of Rolling Stone. Jar Jar was fucking everywhere. They were like, this guy is a star. Everyone's going to love Jar Jar. He's going to be like, they were all in. And I feel like that.
Jay is Jar Jar.
They just seemed like they were like, this, she, everyone's going to love her. They, my apologies. Yeah. Everyone's going to love them. And I was just like, are they watching a different show? Are they seeing a different character? And Jar Jar is kind of perfect because I do feel like if we get another season of this, I feel like it's going to be similar to Jar Jar, which is that Che's going to get like one scene and that's going to be that.
Yeah.
They really bought into it.
And again, I think it's too Sarah's like talent that I mean Sarah is such a charismatic performer, and you know, I wish they would come back to Broadway, because like I will say, I know maybe everyone else didn't love it, but I did love that they made Che sing because California I was like, all I want is like, just like, if I can't get Sarah back on Broadway, then I will take this like random moment of them singing and a TV show. And it's like, I just like, Sarah is great. And I think they're giving a great performance on the show, despite the character. Like I think it's to Sarah's credit that, you know, like,
that it's even remotely palatable.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
I think so.
Yeah. I guess it's just, yeah. Yes. I mean, listen, Che forever. I mean, listen, like, let's just, I mean, I hope her show goes to series. I hope that we get more of her. I'm genuinely curious to see what they do with the character in the future, I guess. I don't know, guys. I'm just like, I still don't know how I feel about this fucking miniseries. I feel like I'm going to be thinking about it for, because I genuinely, never. The weird thing is, after the second movie, the show was so dead to me. The characters are so, like, I was just like, I just, you fucked it up. I didn't care. And then when this happened, I was like, they got me caring again, but I'm also just so confused about how I feel now. Before, at least, I was just like, I hate them all. I hate this movie. I hate everything about this. I'll just watch the series forever and pretend the movies don't exist. And now we have this thing, which has sort of like recontextualized everything and made it even harder to like these characters. It's just very strange. Anyway.
I think I'll probably like watch the first two episodes again, maybe. Yeah. I liked the first two episodes. Yeah. I did.
Yeah, I did too. Yep.
And then the series, and maybe the first movie every now and then.
Yep.
Fast-forwarding through like the dry, chunky parts.
The dry, chunky parts is the worst description of anything ever.
The word, as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, what? I said it. As soon as it came out, I was like, that's bad.
It's like if the first original series of Sex and the City is a Cosmo, then this is like drinking the worst like school lunch vegetable soup out of a martini glass. It's so chunky. Oh,
it's so dry and chunky, guys.
hard to believe I am a writer.
It's fantastic. I want to say one last thing about the movies, because I do think that it's something that thankfully they stopped doing, because this is a series and not a movie. The set pieciness of the movies is also something that doesn't work for the show. It's, you know what I mean? Like, I think about that there are no less than three fashion shows, it feels like, in that first movie. Like, just legitimately montages, 15-minute montages of her trying on different outfits, and you're just like, guys, I mean I get it, but like, what are we doing? This no narrative, whatever. It's just spending money to spend money. And I appreciated that. What I think is great about the show, and what I think that this show did relatively well, is again just sort of making it smaller, making it more intimate, making it more about these characters. Even if we didn't love necessarily everything that was happening to them, I at least appreciated that it was a little bit more grounded, and they didn't feel like fucking cartoon characters, you know, globetrotting and doing their married fucking exes. Anyway, this was great, guys. I hope that you enjoyed this. I know I did. And I can't wait to have you guys both back on together, individually, whatever, for anything. You guys are an open door policy. I know that Carrie, we're going to eventually talk about Ally McBeal at some point, which I cannot wait talk about that.
Bonkers show.
That show is fucking insane. True. I sent Carrie a video clip from an episode I watched where Ally's CG tongue.
I've seen that. Yeah. And it's
fucking insane.
I love it though. I'm like,
what is David E. Kelly doing?
Like, they let them do this on network television. Yeah. I just like every time I watch it, I'm like, I cannot believe they were allowed to do this on network TV.
Yeah. What drugs were like, what drugs was he on and where can I get some?
Like, how about like, oh my God, John Cage, like dismounting off of toilets.
And I love him. I would lie down in traffic for John Cage. I will say that right now. I will reiterate it whenever we do an Ally McBeal podcast.
Is John Cage your like ideal man?
No.
Okay.
He's sweet. And like, every time they make fun of him, I'm like, he's just sweet and good.
He is sweet and good and a little broken.
A little broken, a little mentally broken, a little spiritually broken. Just a bizarre kook.
When he's dating Portia de Rossi, it's crazy.
Yeah.
When she wants him to spank her, it's all weird. It's a weird show. Can't wait to talk about it.
Still more sex than And Just Like That, though.
Correct. Emmy, you feel free to come on talk about Ally McBeal with us at some point if you want.
I've never seen a single episode.
Oh
so.
My God. Then this, you on might Hulu. Need to. It's on Hulu. Thank you guys so much for doing this. This was an absolute blast. And can't wait to talk to you guys soon.
One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeits1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits1999. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits1999. Thank you so much to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our amazing art and theme songs. And most of all, thank you all for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.